Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. As always, I would like to encourage you to go give me a rating and or review on whatever podcasting platform it is that you listen to the show on. The more ratings and reviews that a show has, the higher chance it has of popping up in search algorithms whenever somebody goes to look for a podcast that is centered on the particular subject that I have decided to talk about. So, I would like for, you know, if somebody wants to listen to a podcast on Godzilla, King Kong, Gamera, just kaiju in general, I would very much like for my show to be one of the first ones that pops up. So, if you don't mind, please go give me a rating and or review on whatever podcasting platform it is that you listen to the show on. And, all right, guys, on today's episode, I'm actually pretty excited to get to this one. This is the first episode that I'm doing on the Godzilla franchise that takes place during the Heisei era of Godzilla films. And it is also the first film in the Heisei era series. I am doing The Return of Godzilla that came out in 1984. Now, this is not to be confused with the Americanized version that came out the following year that is called Godzilla 1985. That film will have its own entire separate episode that I'm going to do. So, if that's the one that you were hoping to listen to, that's not the one that I'm doing. I know that it was very widespread. It was the only version of this film that was released in the States for years and years and years. Like, the original Japanese version of this movie has only been released here in the States officially for about 5 or 6 years or something like that. Probably not even that long. But if you were hoping to see me do an episode on the Americanized version that stars Raymond Burr, where he actually reprised his role as Steve Martin, because it is considered to be a direct sequel to the Americanized version of the 1954 Gojira, which was titled Godzilla King of the Monsters. That's not the episode that I'm doing. So I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm doing an episode on the original, unedited, uncut Japanese version of the movie that was titled The Return of Godzilla. Now, this film, like, this is one of the movies that I've told you guys about in the last few episodes that I didn't get to see until I was well grown. Like, they just did an official release of the movie in 2016, and the store that was here in town in Alexandria, Louisiana, that carried a lot of off-the-wall things, the kind of stuff that I'm into. They had a lot of different action figures. They had a lot of off-the-wall movies and everything. And they had a pretty good chunk of Godzilla movies. And I remember walking in, and I would always go over there just to see if there was a new release for a new Godzilla movie or a new version of a Godzilla movie or something. And whenever I saw this one, I was like, finally, I've been waiting to see this. I've been wanting to see the unedited Japanese version. So I scooped it up, immediately added it to my collection, went home and watched it immediately. And I'm not gonna lie, I remember the first time I watched it, it's not really that I didn't like it. I just really didn't have an opinion about it. I remember being fairly disappointed with it. But that's not because of how the movie was made or that there was anything wrong with it. I had been wanting to see the original Japanese version of this movie for years. And whenever it was finally in my hands and I got to go watch it, I had spent so many years hyping it up in my own brain. Like, man, this movie's going to be amazing. It's going to be great. first film of the Heisei era, direct sequel to the original and all that kind of stuff. Like, I overhyped it like there was no tomorrow. And then whenever I watched it, it just did not meet the hype that I had created for it. I have since watched it numerous times since then, and I do have a newfound love for it. I watched it again just prior to recording this episode, and I can officially, honestly say that I really like the movie now. I mean, it doesn't rank high on my list of all-time favorite Godzilla films, but I will say it's an enjoyable movie. I really, really like it, and if you haven't seen it yet, by all means, you know, go give it a watch. It's a good movie. Now, this movie is the 16th Godzilla film that was made. And like I said, it is a reboot of the Godzilla franchise. And whenever I say a reboot, the reason why they decide what I mean whenever I say it's a reboot is that everybody knows that the Godzilla franchise was very well established at this point in time. But they decided to go back to its roots, the roots of the franchise, and have a nuclear theme, have it more adult-oriented, and, you know, all that, not be near as child-friendly as the Godzilla franchise had become. And so they just decided to make it a direct sequel to the original film. Now, like I said, this is the first film in the Heisei era, but technically, it is also the last film of the Showa era. And what I say that is the eras were separated by what emperor Japan had at the time. And so the Showa era was all under one Japanese emperor. And whenever this film got made, even though it was a reboot, the emperor that was in power during all the other Godzilla films, he was still in power, but he was not going to be in power for much longer. And so after he, you know, was no longer in power, whenever the next film came out, Godzilla vs. Biollante, since the return of Godzilla is part of that franchise, and this was the first official film of the reboot and everything, they just categorize the return of Godzilla as the first film of the Heisei era, even though it did take place during the Showa era. So there's that. Now, let's get on to inspiration and pretty much how this movie came about. Now, everybody knows, because I've done some pretty recent Showa era Godzilla films, and also just if you've seen any of the Showa era Godzilla films, the further along it went, pretty much the worse they got. Like, the final film of the Showa era timeline of movies was The Terror of Mechagodzilla, which was a direct sequel to Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. The Terror of Mechagodzilla was a failure in every sense of the word. Like, it did not recoup very much money. The fans didn't too much care for it. The critics didn't too much care for it. Like, it was absolutely a failure. And they pretty much decided to put the Godzilla franchise on hold for a little while. You know, before, during the Showa era, whenever the Godzilla franchise was really starting to go downhill, they decided to make one big last, like, final movie that was going to bring everything to an end, and it ended up being Destroy All Monsters. But because that movie was so well received, they decided to keep the franchise going. So instead of doing it again this time and just making one big, massive movie to end everything, to tie everything up and all of that, they just pretty much, Toho decided, you know what, we're just going to put this franchise on hold for a little while. The market has become kind of oversaturated with Godzilla. I mean, they were shelling out a Godzilla movie every year, every other year. Like, it was crazy, the amount of content that they were pushing out. And they were really focusing on quantity over quality. Because, like, at this point in time, the Godzilla franchise was nothing compared to what it originally started out as. The original 1954 film is very serious in tone. There's very little to no humorous moments in it whatsoever. It has a very anti-nuclear theme. Like, it takes itself extremely seriously. And it was the cast and crew took it extremely seriously. And that's part of the reason as to why it is considered the masterpiece that it is. Not just simply, oh, well, it's the first film in the Godzilla franchise. Like, no, it is legit a masterpiece. Like, I have yet to meet anyone that has watched the original 1954 Gojira and walk out saying, no, I didn't like that. I didn't care for that. Like, I know people that do not like watching older movies. They do not like watching black and white movies. They don't like watching foreign movies. Everything about that movie, I know people that do not like things that movie is. And they have watched that movie and turned around and said it was one of the best films that they've ever seen. Like, it's a masterpiece. Then you fast forward to the end of the Showa era, where it's very childish. It's obviously aimed towards children at this point in time. It's silly. Godzilla is no longer an anti-nuclear theme. He is a friend of Japan and, like, protector of the world. He has a crazy amount of humor that is thrown into the movies, complete with him in past films he had shadow boxed at some other kaiju. He had jumped up and did popular dances that were popular in Japan at the time. Ghidorah even fired his gravity beams at his groin area in one fight, and he, like, puts his hands over it. It was like, you know, like, it's just, it's stuff like that. They were way too far off into the deep end. And it was basically to the point to where to continue the Showa era how it was, there was no way that they were going to be able to turn it around. They just couldn't at that point in time. So they decided, you know what, we're just going to put it on hold and give it some time and we'll see what happens. Another thing that they had ended up doing was alienating many of their adult fans. Now, mind you, a lot of people that would have watched the original Godzilla or Gojira whenever they were younger, if they watched it as a kid or as a teenager or something like that, you know, this is, well, you know, 20 years later. They are grown at this point in time. And unless nostalgia is just really pushing them forward to keep watching the Godzilla movies and all of that, they pretty much became alienated. You know, they would, like, there were people that was basically sitting there going, you know, I remember watching the very first movie. It was very serious. It was very good and all of that. And now it's to the point to where it's just a comedy show for kids. And, you know, like, parents was not wanting to take their kids to the theater to watch the movies anymore. I mean, you parents, I'm pretty sure a lot of you parents can relate to that. Think about a show that is on right now. I'm not going to mention any because I don't know what, you know, legal ramifications could be for mentioning certain shows on here. But just think of a show that's done by a very big, popular, child-friendly brand that your kid just loves. And I guarantee you parents that are listening to this right now, your kids have at least one show that they adore, that they love, they want to watch it all the time, and you cannot stand it. You think it's the most annoying thing to ever come out, and you want to wring the neck of the creator of that show. So now, imagine that that's basically what the Godzilla franchise had become back in the 70s. Now, the show that you're thinking of right now, that you cannot stand but your kids love, now imagine that whatever company is doing it, they decided, hey, we're going to make a feature film out of it, a feature-length movie. And it goes into theaters. Naturally, you're going to take your kid to go see it, you're going to suffer through it, you're going to take one for the team, be a good parent, and let them go watch their movie and everything. You know, they walk out loving it. It was great. You know, thank you, Mom and Dad, taking me to see the movie. That was great and all that. And you're just basically sitting there going, boy, I'm so glad that's over with. And, you know, that's one movie. Now imagine the following year, they make another one. You have to drag your kids to that. The following year, they make another one. You have to drag your kids to that. Sometimes the same year, they make another one. You have to drag your kids to that. Eventually, you're going to get to the point to where you're going to basically say, you know what, kid? We're going to wait for that movie to come out on home media. I know I just showed my age right there. I mean, in this day and age, people really just wait for it to go to some type of streaming platform. But, you know, I'm 34 years old. I'm still very much in the mindset of, you know, waiting for something to come out on DVD or Blu-ray. Or here recently, 4K is the new big thing. And I still buy DVDs. You know, I'm a big fan of having a physical copy of things. So, you know, you're going to look at that kid at some point and say, you know what? We're waiting for the DVD on that one. Or we're waiting for the streaming distribution to happen on that one. I ain't dragging you to the theater to see that. That's basically what had started happening to the Godzilla franchise. Parents were no longer wanting to bring their kids to it because it was just too ridiculous. And the adults that had pretty much grew up watching it, it was too ridiculous for them. And they were just, people were moving away from the Godzilla franchise. And this is unrelated to this episode, but believe it or not, at some point in time, I have 4 Showa-era Godzilla films that I still need to do. I've covered all of the other ones except for 4. And after I cover those 4, I'm going to do a massive episode that I'm absolutely going to have to separate into 2 parts, where I'm going to briefly cover all Showa-era Godzilla films from start to finish, basically what the beginning theme was to what the ending theme was by the time the final film came out. And everything that I basically just talked about, I'm going to go into much more detail about in this massive episode that will be separated into 2 parts. And I've already announced it on Facebook at one point in time, so I'm going to go ahead and announce it here. I'm going to title it The Showa Era, The Rise and Fall of Godzilla. And I'll pretty much cover everything about how it started to how it ended and pretty much what led us to the movie that I'm talking about today, the reboot. So they put the franchise on hold, and even though it was on hold, they, you know, there were people with Toho that were talking like, hey, you know, let's try and bring the Godzilla franchise back. Let's try to come up with something new that we can do. Something to make it a little bit more serious, something, you know, just whatever. In 1977, that's whenever the talks really began to amp up about what they were going to do with the Godzilla franchise. And the very first thing that they decided to do, or at least talked about doing, was to do a color remake of the original film, and they were going to call it The Rebirth of Godzilla. And it never really got past the talking phase of the plan, and it pretty much got thrown out the window. The following year, in 1978, they contemplated making a very serious film, and they were going to call it Godzilla vs. the Devil. Yeah, that's not. They wouldn't just gonna call a regular kaiju the devil or a devil or something like that. It was literally going to be Godzilla fighting the devil. And they were like, no, we're not gonna do that either. They tossed around another one that was simply called Godzilla versus Gargantua. Now, was this going to be one of the Gargantuas from the film War of the Gargantuas? Was this going to be an entirely different Gargantua? You know, I don't know. I did as much research as I possibly could. I couldn't hardly find anything on it. I may find something on it one day in the future, and I'll post about it either on Facebook or Instagram, you know, whatever. But Godzilla versus Gargantua never really made it past the talking phase either. Threw it out the window. It was gone. And while all of that was happening, or not long after all of that happened, the main inspiration for the movie took place. And that inspiration was called the 3 Mile Island accident. And for those of you that don't know what that was a radiation leak from a from a nuclear reactor in Pennsylvania. And it was a pretty bad leak. You know, like, I mean, anytime radiation starts leaking, that's not good. But this one was pretty bad. And there's a, to let you guys know how bad it was, there's a ranking system that nuclear radiation leaks and all of that use, in the same way that earthquakes use a scale, the same way that hurricanes use the category system and all of that. This particular scale is called the 7-point International Nuclear Event Scale. And on this scale, it rated 5. So that sounds pretty bad, but it could have been a lot worse. To let you guys know, like, for comparison, about a 5 from a 7, the Chernobyl incident is a 7. This incident was a 5. So, pretty bad, but not near as bad as Chernobyl. But, you know. So, that ends up happening. And Tomoyuki Tanaka, one of the co-creators of the franchise, he pretty much decides to take back hold of the Godzilla franchise. And he does this around Godzilla's 25th anniversary. And he's basically like, okay, I'm not happy with the direction that Godzilla ended up going. I'm going to take back over, and we're going to try and fix what we have created. And he decided to go back to the roots of an anti-nuclear message. And there were a number of things that led him to making this decision. One of the main reasons was the 3 Mile Island accident. But one of the other ones was, around that point in time, there was a pretty good amount of adult-themed horror slash sci-fi films that had started coming out in the 70s and early 80s, that he pretty much saw that they were working, they were making money, and that adults were very much into wanting to watch very adult-themed, dark sci-fi slash monster movies. And some of the movies that had come out that had inspired him to make this decision was Alien, The Thing, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, that's just to name a few, but one of the ones that really stands out is the 1976 King Kong. And so I would just like to point out that while King Kong was not solely responsible for this reboot or for the darker image and theme that Godzilla would end up getting, he was partly responsible, in the same way that he was partly responsible for the creation of the Godzilla franchise to begin with. The 1954 Godzilla film was mainly inspired by a re-release, a very successful re-release of the 1933 film, as well as the release of The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. At that point in time, that's whenever he started creating the Godzilla franchise. And so now, the reboot is happening. He wants to have it have a more darker theme, and the 1976 King Kong, the success that it had, is part of the reason for him to pretty much decide, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go with this reboot. So the franchise had pretty much come full circle at this point in time. It started out somewhat being inspired by King Kong and the release of a very popular American kaiju film and a very serious anti-nuclear message film was made in Gojira. Fast forward all the way to now, and King Kong yet again gave some inspiration. American-made monster movies gave inspiration, and a new Godzilla movie was created with an anti-nuclear theme that's very serious in nature. So it had pretty much come full circle and made the same journey. I think that was pretty cool. Now, the very first version of this movie that we had was pretty much in 1980. There was going to be a movie called The Resurrection of Godzilla. And he was basically going to be fighting a shapeshifter kaiju. And the name of this kaiju was going to be Bakken, B-A-K-A-N. I believe that's how you would say it. Bakken, Bacon. No, can't be Bacon. But, I don't know. But that was going to be the name of the kaiju that he was fighting. And in the background of the movie, they was going to deal with an illegal nuclear waste disposal site. And that was going to basically be the anti-nuclear message that they were going to do. The movie got canceled mainly over budget concerns because, you know, Toho does not look at Godzilla in a very positive light right now. So whenever he submitted that script or that idea, they immediately thought budget. They immediately thought the Godzilla franchise isn't successful anymore. There's no way we're going to make our money back from this. No, you're not doing it. So that got shelved. Then an American director by the name of Steve Miner. Some of you may recognize him. He has directed over his career a number of very popular horror films. He had directed Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3. Part 2 and 3 are some of the best films in the Friday the 13th franchise. He eventually would direct Halloween H2O. Like, he's directed some very successful horror films at this point in time, even though H2O had not come out at the time that all of this was going on. But he wanted to make a Godzilla film so bad that he actually reached out to Toho and said, I will make a Godzilla film for you guys at my own expense. Basically saying, you do not have to give me a budget. You do not have to pay me. I will literally do this because I love the franchise and I just want to make this movie. So Toho was very intrigued by this. They pretty much looked at his resume of films that he had done. They were like, okay, he seems like, you know, he's a very capable director. We'll go ahead and see if he wants to do it. Or just go ahead and let him do it. So they handed it to him. But turns out he wasn't really planning on doing it at his own expense because he still needed to shuffle it around to American studios and all that for somebody to bite on it, to give him a budget so that he could actually make the movie and everything. And it was going to be a very blown up budget of a film. And one of the main reasons why is because he was very insistent. He would not budge that he wanted, first of all, Godzilla was going to be completely and 100% redesigned. And he also wanted the film at all scenes done with Godzilla, and if there were going to be any other kaiju, he wanted it to be done with stop motion, which stop motion was becoming a dying trend in making movies at that point in time. People were really beginning to move away from stop motion. And so that by itself, people were basically going to be like, oh, it's just a stop motion movie. We're not going to care about it. And he also wanted it to be filmed in 3D, which was going to be very, very expensive. And not a single American studio took the bait. They was like, nope, we're not going to mess with it. While all of that is going on, there was a little group in Japan that called themselves the Godzilla Resurrection Committee. This group had 10,000 members, and they pretty much started pressuring Toho, saying, we want a new Godzilla movie. We want a serious Godzilla movie, and we want it done in Japan. We don't want the Americans to do it. We don't want any other studio to do it. We want a traditional Japanese Godzilla film. And so Toho decided, okay, we're going to order a second film that will be strictly for domestic consumption, and we'll release it about the same time that Steve Miner decided to release his. So there would basically be two versions of Godzilla that came out around the same time. But, you know, because Steve Miner couldn't get anybody to bite hold of his idea ended up getting shelved. They were basically like, no, we're not messing with it. We're not going to do it. You can't get anybody to jump on it. We're not going to jump on it because we think it's too expensive, just like the American studios, and we're just not going to touch it. So the Steve Miner version of Godzilla ended up getting shelved and would never see the light of day. And so whenever they decided they were going to go on ahead and full-fledged make a Japanese Godzilla film, they decided, you know what? The Showa era is, there's no saving it at this point in time. It has gotten so ridiculous and so far-fetched. It's done. There's no way we can turn this around. And so that's whenever they decided we're going with a reboot. And it would be a direct sequel to the original 1954 Gojira and would ignore all other Showa-era Godzilla films as if they had never even existed. So the timeline for this would basically be, you know, the Showa era is its own separate continuity that you can watch and enjoy. But with the start of the Heisei era, basically the very first film in that series would be the 1954 Gojira, which is then followed by The Return of Godzilla that came out in 1984. They actually reached out to Ishiro Honda to come back and direct the movie to see if he could work his magic yet again like he had done with the original film. And he declined. Now, the reason he declined, there was a couple of reasons why he declined. First and foremost, he declined because he was busy making other films, either helming it or helping somebody else with something. He was just making other films. He couldn't fit it into his schedule. The other reason as to why he didn't want to do it is because he felt the same way that everybody else felt. He had become pretty disheartened by what Godzilla had become. And it had always not really sat well with him that he worked so hard and put so much effort into the original film to make it what it was. And then the franchise just ends up getting butchered and turned into this ridiculous, childish nonsense. And it just didn't sit well with him. And also, the death of his good friend, I believe his first name is pronounced Aji. I'm not entirely sure, but his last name is Tsuburaya. He was one of the producers for many of the Godzilla films. He had passed away. and because he was very responsible for making the Godzilla franchise very popular and making Godzilla a household name and trying to get Godzilla, you know, done overseas and all of that kind of stuff, Ishiro Honda really believed that, like, the franchise should just end out of respect for him. And so those were the reasons that Ishiro Honda decided not to return to direct the movie. Now, the iconic score that we've heard in many Godzilla movies, that was done, forgive me if I butcher this last name, that was done by a man by the name of Akira Ifukube. I'm just going to call him Akira from this point on. He had come up with many of the very popular themes that Godzilla has had in many of the movies, like his march theme, just many of the battle themes that there are. This man was responsible for it. They asked him to come back to score the movie. He respectfully declined, and the only reason really that he declined was that he was teaching music at a college at that point in time. And so he was basically like, no, I'm more concerned with teaching these college students how to score things and come up with symphonies and all of that kind of stuff than I am pretty much to return and score another Godzilla movie. So he pretty much sat out. So they got somebody else to score the movie and they hired another director. Another big change that they decided to make with Godzilla was to increase his height. At this point in time in the Showa era, he had been, give or take, around 160 feet tall. And that was just basically because of how big some of the taller buildings were that were in Japan at the time. And, you know, 160 feet was decently tall. They decided to increase his height to 260 feet, adding an additional 100 feet to his height. And the reason why is because there had been even bigger and taller buildings built at that point in time in Japan. And, you know, they want the sets that they would create to look pretty accurate to what they were going to be building. And they did not want Godzilla to basically be dwarfed by the new skyline that is in Japan. Like, it's kind of hard to sit there and basically be like, here comes the biggest, most terrifying monster ever, and he only comes up to, like, you know, the 25th story of a building, and there's about another 100 stories above him, you know? Like, so they wanted to increase his height. And so by increasing his height, they had to increase the scale of the sets. And, like, that increased the budget. And so already Toho was starting to get a little nervous, because they're like, you know, they're like, this, we're already scared that this franchise has pretty much run its course. You're wanting to build bigger sets. You're wanting to build, you know, have a bigger budget and all that kind of stuff. So Toho was starting to get worried at this point. But, you know, everybody that was involved with the movie was like, just be patient. Just wait. You know, this movie is going to be great. Trust me. And so the next thing that was on the agenda was a brand new Godzilla suit. It took 2 months to build. And pretty much they built a life-size statue of what Godzilla was going to look like first. And whenever they came to actually build the costume, they just applied layer upon layer of, like, molding and the materials and all of that kind of stuff over the statue until they got it looking the way that they want it to look, and then they just simply peeled it off. And the suit was designed for a specific actor, the actor that was hired to play Godzilla. And at the last minute, after the suit was built and everything, he just decided, no, I don't want to do this. And he stepped away. So they ended up bringing in another actor. He was a veteran. In the Showa era, he had played Gigan and he had played Hedorah in the Showa era. They brought him in to play Godzilla. So yeah, that was a pretty good bump for him, you know, going to playing from playing Godzilla villains to playing Godzilla himself. I imagine he was probably pretty happy about that. But, like I said, the suit was not designed for him. So whenever you watch the movie and you see the scenes like of Godzilla walking around, like one of the scenes where he's like, he tries to bend down to pick up the train. And you can tell it's very awkward. He's straining to get down and do it because the suit just simply was not designed for him. And, you know, he had a very hard, difficult time on set. The suit weighed 242 pounds, making it, at the time, the heaviest Godzilla suit that had been made so far. And little design changes that would be on this Godzilla suit was that they would bring back him having ears, and he would once again have four toes. Those two features had not been seen on a Godzilla film or a Godzilla suit since Godzilla Raids Again, the second Godzilla film in the franchise. Like, and this poor guy that had to play Godzilla, it was a grueling, miserable experience for him. The suit was so heavy, and it would get so hot in the suit, he could only perform for 10 minutes at a time, and he would have to take a break. And by the time production was over with the movie, he ended up losing 12 pounds. Very similar to how in the original film, Haruo Nakajima was acting with a suit that was 200 plus pounds. He could only stay in it for a short amount of time, and he ended up losing 20 pounds, I believe. 20-something, 21, 22, something like that. He ended up losing a pretty good amount of weight after the production of that film. So this guy pretty much went through the same kind of junk that old Haruo Nakajima went through. Now, another thing that was done in this movie, if you watch it and if you've seen it, you will see that there are a lot of close-ups of Godzilla's face. And you will see that something just doesn't look right. Like, it looks different. Like, you can tell it's not a suit, but at the same time, you can tell it's not a handheld puppet that Toho had become accustomed to using for close-up shots. In the 1976 King Kong film, they had created a giant mecha Kong that they were going to use. They wanted him to be able to move around a little bit, be able to move his arms. Originally, they wanted him to be able to take steps and all of that. The Mecha Kong ended up being a massive disappointment. If you watch the 1976 Kong, it only appears in like two scenes, has like a grand total of like 5 seconds of screen time, and it looks horrible. It is standing in like one of the worst positions that it could be, just legs very straight, standing right next to each other. Like, I mean, it was a terrible-looking mech, and it just wasn't good. Toho got inspired by that mecha and decided they wanted to build one as well for Godzilla for close-up shots. They ended up spending $475, which I actually was going to, but I forgot to look up the scale difference of $475 back in 1984 versus $475 today. That's just a little, you know, I like doing inflation adjustments and all of that. I get a kick out of that, seeing what money was back then, what it would be worth today and all of that kind of stuff. You know, you never know. That $475 may have been they spent like $4,000 to get this thing built, you know. So I'm not entirely sure what the transition on that is, but they spent $475, ended up making a 16 foot tall head. It had working hydraulics. There were 3,000 computer operated parts in this thing. They had its jaw like actually hinged like an actual animal jaw, so whenever it would open, it would actually look like an animal is opening and closing its jaw, as opposed to just simply having a flap that would open and close, open and close. You know, they put a lot of detail into it, and it looks great. Like, if you see, like, whenever you watch the movie and you see close-up shots of Godzilla, and you see him roaring, and you see him looking around and all that, like, the mech ended up working out great. It was awesome. And they did a very good job. It blew the Mecha Kong out of the water. And something else they decided to create was a life-size crane-operated foot. There's one scene where you can absolutely see the foot. It comes crashing through a building. It does look kind of weird because you can tell it doesn't look like a monster taking a step. It just simply looks like a foot that is swinging. And so that's what that was created for. And, you know, that's pretty much all I've got to say on the production. The film was released. It performed very, very well. Fans really enjoyed it. The critics really enjoyed it. And it pretty much put Godzilla back on the map. So much so that the Americans got hold to it and said, we want to make an Americanized version of this movie, just like we did with the original. And they did get it. They made one. They shot its own separate scenes. Came out in 1985. It is titled Godzilla 1985 here in the States. Raymond Burr comes back from the 1956 film and reprises his role. This Americanized version of Return of Godzilla is considered a direct sequel to the 1956 Americanized film Godzilla King of the Monsters. However, that film was garbage. And it was not received very well. And, you know, it's one of the cases to where it's happened a few times. You know, sometimes they're kind of about even. There's not a whole lot of changes. But yeah, this was absolutely one of the times where basically everyone was like, why would the Americans honestly butcher this movie the way that they did? And the Japanese version is far superior in just about every single way. And it was so good. The effects were so good with the Mecha Godzilla and, you know, the way his atomic breath looked and the way the explosions happened, the way the buildings looked and all of that. This film actually won an award at the Japanese Academy Awards, and it won the award for special effects. So it is a Japanese Academy Award winning film. And like I mentioned before, this unedited original Japanese version was officially unavailable here in the States until 2016, whenever they finally released it on DVD and Blu-ray. And all right, guys, that pretty much does it for The Return of Godzilla, the first film of the Heisei era. Now, I'm going to go ahead and announce what the next film is that I'm going to do. I know you guys have probably been getting spoiled with a lot of these newer films that I've been doing, some of them taking place in the 80s, some of them being very modern films. I'm going to reach way back to 1954 to cover a, you know, if you go strictly by definition of kaiju, a strange beast, this would absolutely be a kaiju film. Some people may not consider it a kaiju film because this pretty much started its own separate genre of film. But I consider it a kaiju film. It's a very iconic movie. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about it. And it is called Them. That came out in 1954. It is the very first nuclear giant bug movie that was ever made. And it deals with ants. If you've seen the movie, you know, it has a diehard following. It has a cult following. I'm a member of that following. I'm a big fan of the movie. I've contemplated for a while if I was even going to do this one. And then I finally decided, you know what? Let's go ahead and do it. Let's do it. Like, I did not own the movie, but part of the reason what got me to decide to do this was I was scrolling through Vudu. And I was looking at all the films that are on sale. And there's the horror section I saw them. It was on sale. It was very cheap. And I'm like, you know what? It's a sign. I've been thinking about doing it. Here it is right here digitally on sale for like, you know, $5. Let's do it. So I bought it and I'm going to watch it. I have not seen it in years. And, you know, we're going to jump right into it. And I cannot wait. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for today's episode. I'd like to thank everyone for all of the love and all of the support that you guys continue to give me. I'm going to call out specifically my Instagram followers right now. You guys have been so kind to me in like the last 2 weeks. So kind to me. Like, I'm not going to lie. I took out an ad just to see if I could increase some followers on Facebook, and it asked me, did I want to do it on Instagram as well? I hit yes. It was the episode for the King Kong novelization that I did last week, and I got so much love and so much support from Instagram. You people were liking the post. You were turning around and following me. Like, you were doing, like, you've been sending me messages. Some of you are commenting on it and all of that kind of stuff. In about the last 2 weeks, I've gotten more activity on Instagram from all of my posts, probably than what I've gotten in the entirety that I've been on Facebook since I created this podcast. Like, I love my Instagram family now. You guys are great. You guys are awesome. Thank you for all of the love and support. You guys are amazing. You really, really are. Thank you for all of the love and support. If any of you that has already left me a rating and or review on my podcast, thank you, thank you, thank you. I very much love doing this show. I really do. I'm nowhere near done. I'm getting very, very close to starting up the YouTube. I'm working out details about what I'm going to do. I pretty much already know what the very first batch of videos are that I'm going to do. I'll be posting it on Facebook. I'll probably do an Instagram live as well, just because of how much I love Instagram now because of you guys, of a unboxing of a King Kong figure from Nika. And so I know I'm late to the game. The figure has been out for probably about 2-3 years now, but I'm a big fan. I'm an action figure collector, and I'm also a big fan of leaving them in package. But I was able to get my hands on a second figure of this particular one, and so I figured I would do an unboxing, mess with it, play with it, change out the hands and head and all that kind of stuff, and basically just do an action figure review. So, and if you haven't listened to my previous episode on the King Kong novelization, there is a huge announcement at the end. I'm getting close to working out more smaller details and all of that kind of stuff with that. I will be making another big announcement on Instagram and Facebook later on in the future. Don't forget, I am also on Reddit. The subreddit that I created is Kaiju_Carnage. And if you haven't followed me on Instagram yet, I've recently changed my name. It's just my personal account. I don't have an official Kaiju Carnage account on Instagram. And it is just simply Cal Woodman Kaiju Carnage. And the profile picture is me standing at the theater in front of the poster for Godzilla vs. Kong. And I'm wearing my Team Kong t-shirt. Also, if any of you, because I've asked you to follow me on Instagram before, if any of you actually go and follow me on Instagram, kindly send me a message and let me know that you're coming from the podcast, because there's a lot of spam accounts on Instagram, and I've made the mistake. I've never really messed with Instagram a whole lot other than just posting a picture here and there, but I'm starting to figure out, you know, there's a lot of spam on Instagram, and I'll follow somebody, they'll follow me, and then they start sending me all kinds of links for, you know, that could give me viruses and it took me forever to stop the spam comments of like, promote your thing on this or and all that. Like, dude, I don't care. Like, you know, and like I would block the accounts, but it's okay. I got it figured out now. So yeah, if you're listening to this show and you go to follow me on Instagram, just send me a message or something like that and be like, hey, I'm from the podcast. You know, this is my username. You know, I'm trying to follow you and I'll give you a follow back. So, alrighty guys, again, thank you for all the love. Thank you for all the support. I love the Kaiju Carnage community that we have all created together. You guys are amazing, and I'll catch y'all next time for the episode of Them that was made in 1954. Catch y'all next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.